From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fifth day of April 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here too to check in on the cash grain side of the marketplace. As we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenorum from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And along the way, I'll take you to last night's meal packaging event in Jacksonville, Illinois, where five county 4-H clubs gathered together to put together the 1,000,000th meal package to help feed the hungry in the state of Illinois. We'll hear all about that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Now let's turn our attention to the commodity markets and the trade in Chicago with some analysis from Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. What a week it's been so far.
Yeah, sure has been, and I'm out here in my Waco farm, and I got my boots, and I put those spurs on that you guys gave me at the Commodity Week here about a month ago.
I wonder,
hear them in the background?
Yeah, not yet, but you jingle them a little bit. I wondered about that today after she came rallying back and picked up everything, but I think about 4 or 5 cents on the soybeans and what you would have to tell us about this week. So what's your view of it?
There's no doubt that the Trump administration is playing a high-stakes game of poker, but, I mean, that's the way life is. If you want some kind of reward out of stuff, you got to take a risk. No risk, no reward. And Trump is doing what he thinks is best to narrow the trade deficit and improve the U.S. economy, create jobs. There's countries that are taking advantage of us on the trade deals. The last three presidents haven't done anything about it. If anything, they've encouraged it, and they've left Trump with a big mess. And Trump is trying to change things, and that is why the American people voted for Trump. They did not vote for a politician. They voted for somebody to shake things up, and obviously he shook up the swamp yesterday, because you could hear the swamp hollering all the way down here in Texas. I could hear him from Washington to Illinois and Iowa. I could hear the swamp hollering, because anytime you want to change something, the swamp gets all their lawyer lobbyists out and talk about all this business. And just like yesterday, we heard all about this money, how much money farmers lost at the opening bell because of China's retaliatory talk against Trump's trade negotiations. So, you know, I think the shape of the market is, the psychology of the market now is so good that I think it'll climb the wall of worry all summer. And I think it's we're starting probably one of the biggest up moves that we've seen in commodities for a long time. Corn futures closed at the highest level of the season today. Wheat futures broke out of a three-week pattern. And as you said, soybean futures gained everything back but 4 cents. And the stock market not only reversed yesterday sharply, but is posting 300-point gain as we talk here today. So, and it kicked in a good buy signal here today. So I think we're going to look back at yesterday with all that doom and gloom talk as a major turning point in the marketplace, and things are going to go higher from here.
So I'm wondering about this. Let me see if I can give you what I think an average producer might have at risk. Not what he lost yesterday, because that's come back, but what over the long term might be at risk. So if you say they have 500 acres of soybeans, an average size of 1,000 acres, right, on a 50-50, and that is on a 50 bushel to the acre crop, we'll lowball it a little bit to make the numbers easy. That's 25,000 bushels at 50 cents. is $12,500, but let's double it just because the corn's going to go too if things actually go south. So there's a risk of about $25,000. And I guess you're telling me that the risk versus the reward might be worth it?
I don't think there's a risk. Actually, I think you need to take those numbers and reverse them the other way. I'll just about bet before this whole deal's over with, China ends up buying more ag commodities from the U.S. than what they've been previously buying. Now, what does that do to your equation?
Well, I'm just giving you what the risk is. I don't know what the equation looks like if China continues to buy. I'm taking some of the numbers and say, and the 50 cents, by the way, I think that's actually on a 30% tariff, but the 50 cents comes from some work Purdue did earlier in late in last month. So that's not a number I pulled out of the top of my head. Anyway, you're bullish at this point for this marketplace.
Well, it had to be after yesterday. And man, I tell you what, the panicness and the emotion that was on the Twitter wire and all the farm organizations and the grain companies, I mean, they were taking advantage of farmers. I don't know how much grain farmers sold yesterday, but if there was ever a movement afoot to get farmers to sell grain to the elevators, yesterday was a good day to do that. And look at all the money the grain elevators made today by buying that grain from the farmers that everybody got the farmers in such a panic and a tizzy to sell on. I think the farmers' greatest risk is producing a record crop, more so than any trade pickup from China. If weather turns nice, and farmers plant all the acres and then some of what the March 31st report said, and we have a nice cool summer and we raise another bumper crop, that is where the risk is. I think the price risk for the farmer is raising a big crop, not necessarily on losing trade. Now, that's my opinion.
What happens if they raise a normal size crop as opposed to a big crop? Or is that what you consider a big crop?
Yeah, I don't know what normal is anymore after the last few years. But would 168 bushel national average corn, would that be a disaster or would that be a good crop? And that same way with beans. If we had a national average beans of 46 bushels, is that a disaster versus a 49 or 50? But, yeah, if we would raise – let's say the, I don't know what a five-year average is, but a five-year average, corn balance sheet's probably going to tighten up. The soybean balance sheet may snug up a little bit, depending upon how planting goes. But I think the biggest risk is raising another big crop, more so than all this humbunk about trade wars.
So I think Illinois uses 171 for, and I think USDA's number's like 174 on average for the corn crop.
On average.
Yeah. But 168, yeah. If you're six bushels off USDA's number, I don't know.
Is that a disaster?
Probably
not.
Look
how much money the farmers would lose on that, huh, if they lost six bushels to the acre. I got to be friendly. I mean, I everything that I see and I look at, I think farmers have better pricing opportunities ahead of them. Now, that doesn't mean this market's going to go straight up all year long. As I've said many times, I'm more in the camp that we're going to see normal seasonal price strength as we go further into the growing season. We're actually, the market may spend some time in consolidation until we see next week's April supply and demand numbers. But for the most part, we already know what they should indicate because everybody's going to use the March 29th numbers that we got, and then they've already plugged them in the balance sheets. So actually, I see that April 11th report probably being somewhat friendly to the marketplace. And then, of course, we'll see if we're making any progress toward planting and how further behind we're getting on corn planting. And that might begin to take hold as a more important factor. You know, as a rule, planting delays don't really play into the equation until you get into middle May, because that seems to be the D-Day time when you begin to lose yield potential, you begin to lose acres at that point for corn, and you begin to pick up some acres in soybeans and whatnot. So, but I, you know, after yesterday, after a very emotional trade day, I think the market performed quite well today. Now, I think there's still some ups and downs, some backing and filling to go. And we'll probably see what happens on this report. I think it's the 11th. I don't know what day that is. But I think after that report, the market will probably have kind of consolidated and did enough backing and filling. And if that report is interpreted as generally friendly, I think the market then will resume its uptrend as we move on into the month of May and we see how planting goes.
All right. I think I've got you warmed up for Commodity Week this afternoon. Can't wait for 3 o'clock to roll around. I'll talk with you then, okay?
Okay, get in.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He will join us for Commodity Week. We'll get that posted to the website by about 5. Hopefully tonight you can hear most of it or all of it, probably here on our home radio station tomorrow. Pete Manhart will join him along with Clayton Pope. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. and China have about a month to head off an all-out trade war that is likely to cost American farmers. That gives longtime Ag Senator Chuck Grassley some hope. He says President Trump may take a step back, as he did with others, on steel and aluminum tariffs.
Mexico, Canada being exempt. So when we had threats of retaliation on steel and aluminum from Canada, and Mexico, that's a step back that the president's taken. There's a step back with South Korea, because we were going to impose those duties on South Korea, and they agreed to let more cars into South Korea.
Grassley and other Midwest lawmakers have been pressing the administration for months to tread cautiously, but Grassley, just back from China, slammed the Chinese for stealing U.S. technology.
But they were very adamant that there's no government policies to promote and encourage that. And let me say this. As far as I'm concerned, that's an outright lie.
Now, Grassley says the Chinese know exactly what's going on. They're forcing U.S. firms in China to hand over trade secrets, hundreds of billions worth, or be kicked out. But U.S. producers are becoming hostages in the fight. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue tells reporters the administration is readying countermeasures.
Action will be taken here. We're not going to let farmers be sacrificed on trade wars.
Perdue is not ready to describe what actions, with, of course, internal talks ongoing. Grassley says farm subsidies could be triggered if prices fall too low. Major farm groups are calling for a strong farm bill, but that's now hung up in a House dispute over tougher food stamp work requirements. Well, elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the National Corn Growers Association says reported renewable fuel standard waivers granted to a large refiner undermine the RFS. NCGA President Kevin Skunas says the granting of waivers significantly reduces the number of gallons of fuel blended with ethanol, hurting rural economies and the nation's corn farmers. Reuters reported earlier this week that the Environmental Protection Agency granted RFS waivers to a large refining company, essentially letting the company off the hook from its obligations to blend ethanol fuels. The report also angered Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, who says the waivers intended for small, struggling refiners would amount to a massive government handout to a big corporation. Andeavor, owners of the refinery, are the alleged receiver of the waivers, and the company made a profit of more than $1.5 billion last year. Grassley says the alleged secret waivers granted by the EPA are more than unfair, adding the practice may be illegal. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, Thursday night, 4-H'ers in Illinois packaged up their 1,000,000th meal to help feed the hungry. The weather was cold for the beginning of April, of course, but the hearts were all warm. 4-H members and volunteers gathered in a shed to create and package up meals. It's something they've been doing under the guidance of Illinois Extension's Bill Million over the last 5 years.
That time was the same year we launched our 4-H Feeding and Growing Our Communities initiative here in Illinois. And meal packaging has been one of the integral components of engaging 4-H members, 4-H clubs, and communities in activities that address hunger and food insecurity here in Illinois.
Well, that's no small accomplishment. Feeding America puts the number of food insecure in the United States at about 13.5%, with far more than 1 million of those in Illinois. That means they're not sure when or where they'll get their next meal. And now, 1 million of those meals have been packaged up for them by kids like Marshall Bowman. He says the volunteer work is a good thing to do.
Because you're giving people food so they can live.
Marshall and his friends in Morgan County packaged up about 12,000 meals in an hour. It's an event that's been happening all across Illinois for the past 5 years. In those 12,000 meals, by the way, was the 1,000,000th package. And so very much more, says Bill Million.
Oh, absolutely. They're learning leadership. They're learning civic engagement. They're learning to be able to work together as a team. They're learning to be able to follow directions. We have Clover Bud members, the youngest audience we have in the Illinois 4-H program, with us tonight. And it's at that age where they're beginning to learn cooperation, teamwork, being able to follow directions, and at the end of the evening have a good feeling that they were able to help somebody else.
A somebody else that needed their help. Let's check the cash grain situation now with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great, and you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. So Dan was a little on the bullish side with us today because things came roaring back after yesterday, and he's ready to make this market go. How about you?
Well, I think, I haven't really changed since, for instance, we talked over there at Marshall there a couple weeks ago. I mean, on the corn side of things, yesterday morning when the market was down 15 cents, I said some of these guys that, want to get out of some of their hedges. What a wonderful opportunity, because some of them started getting a little bit bullish like everyone else. I don't want to get too cute with the market, for instance, but man, whenever you get a chance to actually bank some profit on a hedge and then get a chance to do it all over again just 24 hours later, I mean, what a gift that we've seen with the market here in the last day or so.
What do you see going forward?
Well, I think, the corn market, essentially, if this weather doesn't change, you're going to be hard-pressed to get 88 million acres. And 88 million acres is a very bullish situation with any sort of weather whatsoever this summer. So I don't want to get my horns on too much. I mean, I'm certainly friendly to the corn market, but I'm going to be making a few sales as we go. I think soybeans at this stage of the game have more acres to gain, but by all means, this soybean market as well sure recovered quite nicely. As I said all along, I thought that this was going to be a way to buy cheaper soybeans for the Chinese is exactly what I thought was going to happen.
Any last bit of advice before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, don't get too bullish. You know, if you're friendly, go ahead and make a sale on the way up. Scale up selling's the way to go.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora now joins us. He's from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Here in the United States, it's been cold. It's been wet. Farmers would like to see some better weather. Do you have an indication of April changing at all or not?
Well, temperatures are going to turn a lot warmer in about a week from now. So that's the good piece of news for everyone who wants their soils to warm up. The bad piece of news is that with that warmer pattern, we see a lot of rain chances beginning in about a week from now, and we still have to go through some cold and fairly wet weather to even get to that point. So the large picture here basically is showing us that we're going to stay wet and cold in the near term, and then even though we'll be a little bit warmer here in about a week from now, even seeing highs in the 70s as far north as Illinois by the end of next week. That will be accompanied by a stormy period and some cooler weather after that. So, Todd, what we're telling all of our subscribers right now is that you can make an argument that it will be difficult for much planting to occur in the Corn Belt or the Dakotas or Nebraska until at least the last 7 to 10 days of the month.
Any indication about whether they can continue to plant in the Delta regions?
Well, the Delta will see some more rain tomorrow and some pretty healthy rains at that. They basically will have a round of thunderstorms move through tomorrow evening and tomorrow night, and that will produce around 1 inch of rain. After that, things do dry out for about a week, and they also will experience much warmer temperatures as next week progresses, even reaching the 80s across much of the Delta by the time we're at today, 1 week from now. But that will also be followed by some pretty big rains. So essentially what's going to happen in the Delta is that you'll see planting start to take place early next week and then really get going over the second half of next week. But once it's ready to really rip and roar, we'll see more rain.
What's your assessment for the weather for second crop corn in Brazil?
Well, there's only a small percentage of corn in Brazil that's been drier than normal over the last 30 days. So at the moment, everything is looking really good there. The big uncertainty, though, regards what happens over the next couple of months, because keep in mind, their climate turns sharply drier every single week all the way till the end of May. And by the time we get into the end of May, it's not unusual for no rain to occur for weeks and weeks on end all the way into August. So we need these rains to continue, and at least in the near term, they are going to continue for the northern half of the second crop corn belt. That area will receive 1 to 3 inches of rain over the next 5 to 7 days. However, to the immediate south, including the southern half of the corn area, we're not looking for much of any rain over the next 2 weeks, and everybody starts to dry out once we get into the end of the month because we just won't be able to have these cool fronts penetrate far to the north. So they're not out of the woods at this point in time, but at least as of today, everything is looking pretty good. We do have some dryness concerns for the southern half of the wheat belt or corn belt going forward, and that may well expand further to the north by the end of the month, but we still have some time to figure that one out.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd. I'll talk with you next week.
That, of course, is Mike Tenori. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago.